This is NPR.
This is the end, my only friend, the end.
Well, humanity's had a pretty good run, but that's all over now, thanks to the Mayans. Yes, it's the end of the world on the 21st, as the Mayan calendar has foreseen. So let's go out on top with an end-of-the-world party at Rockwell. KXLL presents the Mayan End of the World Party this Friday, starting at 9 p.m., with three great live bands, the B-Team All-Stars, Disco Punch, and Tiger Pilot. It's a 21 and over event, $5 at the door, a full bar, and it all happens at Rockwell. It's Apocalypse Friday, and it's the end.
This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plan.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. We've got a really fun show today, including members of the Alaska String Band. Laura Zahasky will be here talking to us. They got a gig at the Island Pub this weekend. We'll be talking about that. Also, the St. Vincent de Paul is having an Adopt-a-Family program, and folks will be here to let us know what that's all about. Raven's Cove, an Alaskan iconoclast mystery, is authored by Mary Ann Pohl, and we'll be talking to her, this Alaskan author who has a newly published mystery book, part of a series, and we'll be talking to her on the phone. Be really interesting to talk to her about that. Also, Nancy DeCherney will be here for Arts Up. Well, the forecast for today is for mostly cloudy skies, locally very windy with highs 19 to 26 degrees, and northeast winds up to 20 miles an hour, except up to 60 miles an hour near downtown. That's gusts of 60 miles an hour. That's today. And then partly cloudy skies tonight, locally again, very windy, lows around 10 degrees, except one below zero in wind-sheltered areas tonight. So getting colder, and 60 mile an hour winds again near downtown Juneau and Douglas and out of interior passes. Friday is looking at partly cloudy skies in the morning, then becoming sunny with highs 18 to 24 degrees. And Friday night, once again, cold weather with lows around 10 degrees and gusts of wind around 40 miles an hour. Now here's National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Kalikimaka is the thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we sing to you from the land where palm trees sway.
There's the Alaska String Band doing their version of Mele Kalikimaka. Don Ho does it in Christmas Vacation, which is awesome, but
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about, so we've got a couple of the Alaska String Band in with us right now, Laura Zahasky and Quinn Zahasky. Quinn, you're just off the mountain.
Yep.
Very cool.
Real good.
Yeah. How was it up there? Nice?
Sunny, cold, and really fast.
Uh-huh. Good. Yeah. Good.
Yes.
Well, that's cool. So tell me a little bit about what you guys got a gig coming up on coming up here on Saturday over at the Island Pub, right?
Playing Saturday from 7 to 10 at the Island Pub, the 22nd, so right after the End of the World party. So if you make it through the End of the World, come see us on Saturday.
Thank you for mentioning the End of the World party, yes, and that's happening Friday. So, yes, if on the other side, we'll see you on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Meet at the Island Pub.
Mm-hmm.
Let's reconvene. We'll reconvene civilization starting at the Island Pub. That's, I think, a great idea.
Everybody needs to be there. That's going to be great.
Well, you guys have kind of gone through some different iterations. People have known you as the Zahasky Family Band, as well as Alaska String Band and all that kind of stuff, and have seen you play with your brothers and sisters and parents and all the whole group of folks. Is that your mom singing the lead on that one, or who's singing the lead on that?
That was me.
Oh, that's you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Very nice. Who handles, let's just go through kind of the tasks. Do you handle lead vocals on a lot of tracks? Or?
Actually, we split the leads a lot. Each one of us, on this last CD, each one of us took a lead, and then we did a few instrumentals. So it's really not one person, which makes it fun for all of us. We can if I sing a lead, the other two will do vocals, and then we'll switch. So that's what makes it fun.
And then do you also have – you sing leads and stuff like that as well sometimes? Or?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It depends.
Yeah.
He brings it out of the closet once in a while.
Yeah. Do you prefer it or do you prefer not to?
I prefer to play bass than sing. That's just me, though. I like my bass.
To the family pressure, right?
Yeah. I like to hide behind other vocalists. So I'm like, I'll hide back here.
I like to sing when I don't know the people in the audience.
Yeah. That does make a difference. Yeah.
That's when I like to do radio. Same thing. Yeah. If I don't know anyone out there.
You can't see anybody listening. It's great.
No matter to me.
You can't talk about anything.
Right. Well, so the experience of growing up in a musical family and kind of – and then taking it even that much further, playing in a family band – tell me how that's been. I mean, I'm guessing it's mostly positive and fun, right?
Yeah. It's lots of fun. Times, it's not so much, but – yeah, over the years, it's been a lot of fun.
Bands are famous for having the riff, you know, behind the music, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it's your family, like, and you're, you know, that, it adds an extra layer of not just closeness, but also pressure, I think, when it comes to, like, deciding musical stuff and all that kind of thing.
Right? Actually, the family element makes it really fun as far as that because, you know, we're all very comfortable with each other and we're all very, you know, we each voice our opinions, and so it's not... which makes it fun as a family. It's not one person running the show so much as all of us combining our interests. And genre-wise, we do a lot of genres, so that makes it fun. Everybody can bring what their interests are to the group, and that makes it fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
And are there certain genres that you feel like you, in particular, I'll just pick on you, Quinn. Is there certain genres of music you feel like you've brought to the family band and said, hey, we should try this?
Not that I've brought, but there's ones I'd like to bring, but Mom and Dad won't let us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A little Tool or some, you know, bring it.
50s rock.
Yeah, 50s rock. Rap, nothing like that.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. No. But you'd rather do 50s rock, but they don't want to
well,
go down that.
Well, not that I'd rather, but it'd be fun to try.
Yeah,
we've tried a few things, but he brought the slap bass, which was really
nice.
A key element to our sound, which has been fun.
And where'd you pick that up?
The Hot Club of Cowtown, when they were in town. I watched Jake. I YouTubed him for like 2 years.
Yeah. They were here at the Folk Fest.
Yeah.
I think the 30th Folk Fest or something.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing too. And picking up tips and picking up musical styles and that kind of stuff from – do you feel like it's more useful to do that when you see someone in person versus kind of just seeing people in videos and that kind of thing?
I prefer looking in person because then you can sometimes talk to them about it, but
– yeah, I like YouTube.
I mean, it's sort of a, yeah, I mean, it's in Juneau, not everyone's going to come through town, certainly, yeah.
Traveling has been neat for that. We've run into a lot of phenomenal groups, which has been exciting for our playing just to inspire us and push us to learn new things.
Tell me a little bit about that. You guys have gone out on tours, right, and done that kind of thing,
right? Yeah, our first trip was in 2006, and we were gone for about 3 months. We bought a bus, and we did the East Coast in 2006 and played... and we didn't tour 2007, but every year since, we've been playing in the fall and winter.
Wow.
And this year, we left in late or mid-September, and we just got back a few weeks ago, and then we're leaving again first week of January, and we'll be back in April. So
you miss all the winters in Juneau.
We do miss the winters.
Yep.
We come back for just long enough to get a good dose of the dark and the cold, and then we go
south.
And the skiing. Yep.
Have the size of venues changed through the years? Are you playing fairly significant size venues, or is it kind of varied depending on what town you're in or what kind of gig it is?
It varies, really. Mm-hmm. Last year we were at a festival. We were expecting it to be like 200 people, and we walked out, and was it like 3,000? The one in South Texas? Yeah.
Which one?
There are a few more people than we thought.
Yeah, right.
It's varied. We played the Belcher Center for the Performing Arts in Longview, Texas, which seats about 2,500. It was a student body, so we played there. And then the next day we played at the Pick and Place in Lone Star, Texas for 5 people. So it's very varied. There's not –
So it's humbling.
Nothing.
The minute you get a little bit full of yourself, it's humbling.
As soon as we feel really good, then we play somewhere else. Like, yep.
But those 5 people were happy and pleased and had a great show.
It's a blast for us. The smaller audiences are more fun sometimes.
Yeah. What's the largest audience you've gone out in front of? Is that the 2,500? Is that pretty much it? Or has there been larger ones? Or
probably.
That's probably the largest.
So what is that like when you step out on stage and there's 2,500 people all there kind of clapping? And
usually we can't see them. There's stage lights. It's fine because
it's kind of like
we
radio,
can't see anything.
But different.
Right. You see the first couple rows maybe and then there's just nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
And then just hear them.
Yeah, that one was all college students actually. So that was really fun.
Pretty rowdy and right.
They were excited.
Right.
Really fun.
Very cool. Well, you guys have a tour coming up here starting, as you were saying, in January. You're going to be gone for 4 months. What area are you going to cover?
We're going to start in South Texas, and then we're going to go to New Mexico and Arizona, Nevada, and a little bit of Southern California. And then we'll end in the Midwest up in Iowa.
Oh, cool. Is there an area of the country you guys haven't played in yet? Or have you played everywhere?
We haven't played in Hawaii.
We've never played in Hawaii,
Nebraska. We haven't played in Hawaii.
And Nebraska.
We haven't played in Nebraska.
We got to hit Nebraska. It's right there in the middle.
How can you miss it?
You probably crossed back and forth over it a bunch of times.
I think we've driven through it, but we've never played there. So.
We haven't done much of the East Coast, like up north. We haven't done Rhode Island or those states.
Yeah, we did the southern part of the East Coast. We did the Carolinas, but not the northern.
Yeah. Do you know what is it festivals? Is it colleges? Is it a mix of stuff? Or what are the venues that you guys end up playing most?
We do festivals, colleges, houses. We've done a couple house concerts. Those are fun. Churches, schools, hospitals.
We did a thing called Harmony at Mayo this last trip, and they took us into the bone transplant ward.
At the Mayo Clinic
in Rochester. And that was really neat. We did a concert in the Commons, and they broadcasted that to all the TVs in the hospital. But then we also got to play in the bone transplant ward, and that was really neat.
Must have been quite moving. I mean, to be there with people recovering from this.
It was a really neat experience for us.
Yeah. Wow, really. I mean, you think about that. Is there any other unusual experience you can think like that's happened rather than just playing like a normal kind of concert that we would think of as, playing a club or playing a festival?
We played in Wharton, Texas, this last trip. And there was a guy there who introduced us, and he gave us the history of how Juno was founded. And his version of the story was that Juno was actually founded by Mexicans who swam out the Gulf of Mexico and got lost. And they said, "What'd you know?" And that was the history of Juno, according to Wharton, Texas. So
very
that was
good.
An interesting contest.
Well, I don't know. We have to look at it in the history books. We'll figure out if that was.
Yeah, that was a little bit off, but.
Not sure which history book that came from.
Well, so everyone in Juneau, though, has an opportunity to see you guys, this touring band in high demand in the rest of the country. Very limited engagements here in Juneau, and it's going to be at the Island Pub starting at 7 o'clock on Saturday. You played over there before?
We played on the first.
Oh, okay.
When we were here, yeah.
Yeah, cool. I love seeing bands there because it feels so intimate.
Yeah, it's a fun place to play.
Yeah.
And we get pizza, so it makes it all worthwhile.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win situation.
All right. Well, hey, it's the Alaska String Band, and Laura and Quinn Zahasky, thanks so much, you guys, for coming in.
Thank you.
You can hear another track here from the Alaska String Band right now. That's music from the Alaska String Band. They're going to be playing at the Island Pub Saturday at 7 o'clock. And go see them, because it's exclusive to see them. They're out on tour most of the time. Up next, we've got folks from St. Vincent de Paul. They've got a really great program going on right now called Adopt a Family. Rena Sims and Paula Sumdum are with me. Thanks to both of you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us very much. And merry, merry Christmas to you and to all of Juneau and all of Alaska.
Yes. Well, I think the show really only goes to Juneau, but okay. If anyone else is listening.
If you're in from out of town, we say Merry Christmas to you, too, from St. Vincent.
Tell me about Adopt a Family. What's the kind of just the general, what's the program about?
Well, we adopt the needy, the homeless, those that are having medical problems and can't seem to be able to give a nice Christmas to their children. The community does that. I have been so blessed that when we did it at Thanksgiving, Juneau came through, and the first time in St. Vincent's history, we have become, from the St. Vincent de Paul Society Council, we became national. So we are now national, recognized as a donating community.
You have to have a certain amount of families that you support, or is that the criteria there?
I don't know, but we went national in the United States, and so I want to say thank you to this community. At Thanksgiving, we had 500 needy families, and all 500 needy families got met.
No, 520.
520.
Yeah.
520. The last 20 were a hard one.
And here we are at Christmas time here. And we had 50 when we went in the newspaper, but actually we had 75, which is a representation of over 300 children. And so we have some families that are left. I think it's like 12, whereas in the beginning we had 12 only adopted, and we needed the other 35. Now we have 12 families. Today, I think it was up to 20, but the others are small. And so we would love for it if Juneau would come forth and make it happen for us again so these families can have a Merry, Merry Christmas. Again, we just say that our teenagers are the hard ones. And we normally don't do this, but we have a couple of kids that are begging us, please, can we get a iPad? And I said, we don't know, but $50 usually covers it. If you would like to make your donation, you can call St. Vincent de Paul at 789-5535. If you'd like to send a check in by mail, the address is 6617 Till Street, Juneau, Alaska 99801. If you would like to go online and do our webpage, it's svdpjuneau.org. Or, better yet, if you would like to stop in at St. Vincent and drop off a check, we would appreciate that.
Listen, there's people calling you right now, trying to get a hold of you, trying to get in on this right this minute. They want to adopt families out there.
That's right.
I love it.
and that has been the case, that we have gotten people to call me to stop by and say, we're on our way. There was this one lady with her three kids. She said, we only got $20, but we want to put it in there. And then we had some kids come in with change, and we see people coming in the door. They did what we asked, going shopping. If your kid likes it, my kid's going to love it more. Okay? And so here we are. Our teenagers, we have a stack of teenagers that are left. And
they're tough because they, you know, typically want a little bit more sophisticated toys.
That's
they're
right.
interested in stuff that might be a little bit maybe more expensive. That
That's
kind of
right.
Stuff,
they want the iPod. They want the, what is that thing? The
video games.
Video games, all like that, you know. So
DVDs.
DVDs.
CDs.
Yeah, and that.
MP3s.
And do people, the way that people get involved here, though, they give a cash donation or do they bring in goods as
they
well?
They bring in goods and give cash and donate online.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We're just hoping, because we, you know, if someone did get the iPad, that would be better because it takes a lot to convince the board that we spent $200.
Yeah, right,
we
right,
can't do that. It's
right.
$50. But if someone brought it in, that would be great.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And do businesses also get involved? Do businesses end up sponsoring?
Let me tell you, Channel Construction, Southeast Alaska Furniture, Northland Delivery, the Lions Club, the Eagles, Alaska Pacific Bank. You know, there are so many givers. You know, Pay It in Advance does it. There are the little shops that just come, and it's the community. It's not the great big organizations that do. It is Juneau community that makes it happen, and we appreciate that very much. I could go through a whole list. If I left someone off, please forgive me, but I just want to tell you that it happens. It happens, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, it seems like the businesses in Juneau are always step up, right?
It's your local businesses that actually make it really happen. Okay, they care. Juneau cares about their people. And so Merry Christmas, and all I can say is thank you one more time. Paula, what do you have to say?
Oh, I want to thank Juneau also for stepping up when the Gastineau apartments burned down.
Yes.
And those people all have been housed, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. But they are also included in some of the families because they're just worried that there's going to be food on the table. And so to have something nice. And the people were so gracious and so giving at Thanksgiving time, mm-hmm. as they are every year. Mm-hmm. But 520 baskets mm-hmm. was a mountain of food. Let me tell you, it really was.
You know, you have your Myra Munsons. You have people that just, your David McDowell. You have all kinds of people that make it happen here. We're just very grateful. Gas and Go. You know, they're not the great big old gas stations. Mike Airport Express, you know, they chip in. They come in. They say, you know, I know you're going to use this for our people. So I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It's a fantastic community charity program and a giving program in a way that people can really directly affect the lives of the people that
Absolutely.
Are living here. And as you say, especially folks who are struggling a little bit, to have something that just feels a little bit nice
yes.
at Christmas is such a way of feeling like life can be normal and life can be really, you know, rewarding.
Yes.
One lady was so excited because she got a box of chocolate-covered cherries, and that meant so much to her and her kids because that's something they never get. That's not a necessity, and it meant so much.
And when you have families that have been medevaced here or fathers
oh, yes.
have died, mothers have died, sisters and brothers, everything going for a funeral. I myself just lost a son. You know, I cannot tell you how nice it is to know that others are thinking of you and they're wanting you to have a blessed holiday. And again, very merry, merry Christmas.
And thank just, you, Juneau.
Yeah, maybe just one more time, the contact information so people can contact you and make sure that they're getting a hold of you. And as we dig through all our information here.
So if you would like to donate online, the webpage you want to go to is St. Vincent de Paul, and it's svdpjuneau.org. If you would like to drop in, it's at Smith Hall and drop off check, cash, or whatever you would like to buy, 6617 Till Street. If you would like to call, 789-5535. I'm looking forward to by Saturday. We should be through passing out our Adopt the Family Christmas gifts and some dinners. And again, we say thank you. I can't say thank you enough. Have you noticed that? Thank you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Teal Street is right behind the Nugget Mall.
Great. And thank you both for coming in and for all the work you do as well.
We're blessed.
Thank you.
Here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 20th of December, 2012. It's the birthday of the Russian writer Yevgenia Ginsburg, who was born on this day in Moscow, 1904, teacher, journalist. When she was 32, she was arrested in a roundup by the state. Her husband, parents, also arrested. Ginsburg, sentenced as an enemy of the people, served 18 years in prison and forced labor or exile, 10 years in Siberia. She survived to write memoirs of her time in the Gulag, Journey into the Whirlwind and Within the Whirlwind, published abroad, but 12 years after she died in 1977, her books were finally published in the Soviet Union. It's the birthday of the playwright John Fletcher, born in Rye, England, 1579. He wrote for the King's Men, the acting troupe that produced Shakespeare's works. And when John Fletcher died during the plague epidemic, 9 years after Shakespeare,
He was as famous in England as Shakespeare was, and now nothing of his is performed except Henry VIII, which he collaborated on with William Shakespeare. And it's the birthday of Hortense Kalischer, born in New York City, 1911. Father was a manufacturer of soap and perfume. Kalischer grew up well-to-do during the Depression, did not try to publish anything until she was almost 40, sent some of her stories to The New Yorker, which published five of them. First novel, False Entry, was published in 1961, 600 pages long. After that, she turned out book after book, 23 novels and short story collections. She was 90 years old, Hortense Kalischer, when she published her last novel, Sunday Jews, in 2002. And 2 years later, her memoir, Tattoo for a Slave. Here's a poem for today by Marge Piercy, entitled Gifts That Keep on Giving. You know when you unwrap them, fruitcake is notorious. There were only 51 of them baked in 1917 by the personal chef of Rasputin. The mad monk ate one. That was what finally killed him. But there are many more bouncers. Bowls, green and purple, spotted like lepers. Vases of inept majolica in the shape of wheezing frogs or overweight lilies. Sweaters sized for Notre Dame's hunchback. Hourglasses of no use humans can devise, gloves to fit three-toed sloths, mufflers of screaming plaid acrylic, necklaces and pins that transform any outfit to a thrift shop reject, boxes of candy so stale and sticky the bonbons pull teeth faster than your dentist, weird sauces bought at warehouse sales no one will ever taste unless suicidal or blind. Immortal as vampires, these gifts circulate from birthdays to Christmas, from weddings to anniversaries. Even if you send them to the dump, they resurface, bobbing up on the third day like the corpses they call floaters. After all living have turned to dust and ashes, in the ruins of cities, alien archaeologists will judge our civilization by these monstrous relics. Gifts That Keep on Giving by Marge Piercy, from The Hunger Moon, published by Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering writing about finances, food, art, wine, and culture from around the world. More at wsj.com/celebrateweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry App. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon, where the forecast for the rest of today calls for mostly cloudy skies and very windy locally with 60 miles an hour winds for downtown Juneau and Douglas. And the temperatures in the 19 to 26 degrees for the rest of today. Then tonight, getting down colder with the lows around 10 degrees and even to just one below zero in wind sheltered areas. And out of those wind shelter areas, it will be windy with, once again, wind gusts to around 60 miles an hour near downtown Juneau and Douglas and out of interior passages. Well, next to here on a Juneau afternoon, I'm pleased to have with me calling in Marianne Pohl. And Marianne is a mystery writer. She has written a series called the Alaskan Iconoclast Mystery Series, of which Raven's Cove was one, and the brand new one is called Ingress. And Marianne Pohl, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about the kind of overarching arc of what this Iconoclast Mystery Series is about.
The Iconoclast Series actually is about two things. First, it is a thriller and asks the question, what if a legend is really the truth? And then it asks, how are we going to deal with the ultimate battle of good versus evil?
All right. So it gets into the weighty issues of good versus evil, but does it in a way that's thrilling and mysterious and a little spooky.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Well, tell me specifically about Ingress. What's the major development of the story that's happening in Ingress?
In Ingress, the actual major development of that story is, you know, I believe your theme would probably end up being revenge, but it is developed by a mayor who wants to bring tourism to his town, as we all can understand.
Yes.
In Alaska. So it starts by him bringing in a town that has been told to be cursed. That's the legend of that book.
Oh, okay. So this is kind of dabbling in the dark arts a little bit here? Is that what's happening?
There's not really, I would not call it dabbling in the dark arts. I would call it somebody not realizing what they were doing and the consequences that are going to occur from doing it.
I see. So by having the intention of doing something that's sort of a everyday thing, like a mayor wanting to increase tourism in a town, he stumbles into and blunders into a little bit of something that's got a power beyond his
exactly.
his understanding a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting. Tell me a little bit about how you as a writer got interested in writing in this style. And writing about these kinds of subjects?
You know, that is a question that is very good and has come up before. I love three things. I love to read, I love to research, and I love a good ghost story. And so if you bring those all together, especially in this day and age where there is so much out there, and I read Stephen King and I read people like Patricia Cornwell and Sue Grafton, well, I kind of tend to put them together. And so, you know, just if you sit there, that's what happened. I sat and I thought, what would really be a fun book to write for me? And what do I enjoy reading? And what would my readers enjoy that's a little different? And that's how they came about.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit of the kind of the business of being a writer, how did you go about getting this published? I mean, there's lots of folks out there who are writers and, you know, work on this stuff. But then getting to that point where you actually get your book published, tell me about that process.
And for those writers out there that are thinking about that, that is a very scary process.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be, but it is. Because I'm just going to back up and say, it's like putting your baby out in the world, because I know writers would understand that. What I did was I did some research. I looked at doing it on my own because there's so many out there you can do that with now. I decided to go with someone locally in Alaska because I want to be able to look my publisher in the eye. So I took my book to this publisher who looked at the first two pages and really liked it. And he read the rest of it and said, yes, we will do one book. We'll do the contract for Raven's Cove. And that's where it started. And it went so well, he did the contract for Ingress.
Great.
Yes.
And tell me about the distribution of this, and where can people find the book?
They can find the book on Amazon.com. They can find it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it from my publisher, who is Publication Consultants, or on my website. You can also get it from that if you would like a signed copy, if someone would.
Do you know if it's available down here at Hearthside Books in Juneau?
I do not know that.
Okay.
My publisher and the distributor take care of that.
Right.
So, but it is in all ebook formats also. Both of them are.
Oh, so Kindle and that kind of stuff as well.
Kindle and Nook and the Sony and the iPhones and the iPads. It's in every format at this point.
Yeah, very cool. And
yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your background just in general as a writer. When did you start writing? Have you always done that? Or how did you come to the point where you're now writing these books?
Well, no, I have not always done it. I was actually in office administration for 25 years of my life, and I did a lot of technical writing. So what happened was technical writing was a good honing for my skills. But in 1998, I ended up having a disc in my neck rupture. I couldn't go back to work for a long time, and my love for writing became my focus, and it kind of was my, you know, therapy. So that's how I became a writer, a real author at that point. I'd written a lot, you know, we'd done poems and all that. At that point, I really started taking it seriously.
Well, talk about turning a negative into a positive. A serious injury turns into something that allows you to explore kind of the thing that turns into your kind of passion.
And it is, and it did, and I agree that was a wonderful, although I would not want to go through that again.
No, not a career recommendation.
No, not for
me.
No, but it surely did work for this.
Right. Allowed you to, yeah, I mean, that is true. I think that so often people who are creative and artistic in many ways, not just writing, but in other ways, just you always hear, well, I just can't find the time. You just can't set aside the time. You know, people, all of our lives are so busy. And when something forces you and allows you to have that time, the key is to really use it.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I have heard many people when I'm doing signings say they really wanted to write, and it is hard, very hard to find the time.
Did you have some training as a writer before this?
I had quite a bit of training in the grammatical and punctuation aspect because of all the technical writing I had done. In the creative writing, no, that came from my imagination.
And have you explored that at all, or just allowing yourself to explore your creative side of actually writing books is enough?
Right now, writing books is really a full-time job. I had no idea. But I have taken classes. I suggest anyone that wants to creatively write do that, especially if they're writing novels or short stories. They're very there's a lot of intricacy to this.
Yeah. So tell me where your books are set. Where specifically in Alaska?
They are actually inspired by the Homer area, which is south central, off the Kenai Peninsula.
The end of the road, yes?
Yeah, the end of the road. They're actually more inspired by Anchor Point. Raven's Cove is a fictional town that's set on the Cook Inlet, right in that area.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so do you go out to and kind of explore the areas and do kind of setting research and that sort of thing, or do you draw just off of your memory and experience in general?
No, I do go out and do that research. That's a good question. The two books that have been written were because I had actually found an object that became a focal point for the book.
Oh, tell me about that object.
Well, the first one would be in Raven's Cove. You have to read the book, of course.
Yes,
but
I don't know, without giving anything away, yes.
Yeah, it's a tree, which became the focal point for the book. It not a main character, mind you, but the focal point. And that's how Raven's Cove was born, the book.
Just from this tree, from its unusual look, and
yes,
right, interesting.
And Ingress was a boulder, so that's what I mean. I look at the object and I go, oh my goodness, that's a wonderful story.
Really, that's really fascinating that you would be able to just to see one boulder and that turns into the impetus for the spark of inspiration for a story.
Yeah, it was to me too, but that is how I work.
Huh. Interesting. So that field work is really crucial to you finding these ideas because you have to go out and be in the environment in order to get that inspiration.
I really do. You know, you have to feel it, smell it, be able to look, you know, see it, use all five senses. In order for me to write, I need to be able to bring it, to see it and bring it back and put it on paper.
Yeah. Well, are you working on something now?
I am. The third book is on my desk, back from the editor, asking for some changes, and then it will be going to my publisher.
Well, okay, now let me stop you there. So now, what's that process like? When you have, as you say, your baby.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like someone saying, you know, your babies could be improved a little. And of course, you know, so tell me what that's been like for you. Tell me what it's like to get edited in that way.
For me, it's been very good because even though it is my baby out there, I believe that, you know, it can be improved. This one can, and they all can, and I believe in taking work to an expert when we can. And so that's what the expert does, is tell you this is a good book, but here's how it can be a better book.
And is that process fairly smooth, or is it sometimes a little hard to take? Or
it can be hard to take, but mostly, I'd say 95% of this is very, very easy for me to take. But that, you know, I believe in taking, it's not criticism as much as it is a help and a challenge. And when I look at it that way, then it becomes a wonderful experience.
Is the editing that comes up, can it really be fairly major as far as trying to explore some different aspect of the story or develop something further, or is it more kind of like tightening up in that sort of direction?
It's actually a very good question. It's actually both. It depending on the book will depend on if there's a hole that needs to be filled, and that's what the editors do. That's what their eyes do, is they look for the holes and the inconsistencies so that you don't put it out to a reader and then the reader puts the book down because it really doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do it from that angle, and they also, this editor does it from that angle and also from the grammatical and punctuation angle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
Is there a target for when you do a book? Do they talk about targets for length and things like that, like they would with a movie or that kind of thing?
They do.
Oh, okay.
It depends on your publisher, I believe. But the first book from any writer, they usually want it to be 50,000 to 70,000 words. After that, it depends on what you're writing. But in order to get it to a publisher and have the publisher become interested, they want it a smaller book.
Interesting. It's just less of a risk for them in a way, or just more digestible for people to read a new author that's a little bit shorter book?
I believe it's actually, I think it's both.
Uh-huh.
But more, I think it's the publisher wants it, because, they're putting their money into it.
Right.
And they want to make sure that they can see a profit.
Right.
So they're going to, they're taking a risk, just like you would be on a small business. And they're going to put what they think they can get out of it into it and be very fair at the same time. So,
well, Marianne, thanks so much for talking to us today. Once again, it's Marianne Pohl on the line with us, and she's the author of Raven's Cove, an Alaska Iconoclast Mystery, and a new book, Ingress, which is also part of the same series, an Alaska Iconoclast Mystery, set in the kind of south central Homer region, fictionally maybe sort of set in that area. And these are mystery books, maybe kind of, as you said, inspired by writers such as Stephen King, those sort of mystery writers. And thanks so much for joining us today, Mary. I really appreciate it, Marianne.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Okay,
take
great.
Care.
Thanks.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas to you as well.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
Broadcast of this program is made possible in part by the Alaska Budget Report, specializing in the straight scoop on state government since 1991. On the web at akbudgetreport.com.
Support for KTOO comes from the Copper Whale Inn, located in downtown Anchorage, near business and arts, activities and events. 14 guest rooms, cook inlet views, breakfast served daily. The Copper Whale Inn. More information at copperwhale.com.
Coming up in just a couple minutes here, we'll have Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney. I want to thank Marianne Pohl once again for joining us, the mystery writer. And we're listening to Mystery Achievement right now from The Pretenders. Mostly cloudy skies is the forecast for the rest of the day with locally very windy. Windy conditions is the big story in the forecast right now with gusts up to 60 miles an hour. And a short news item. Governor Sean Parnell has ordered the bell at the Alaska Capitol building to ring 26 times at 9:30 tomorrow morning, Alaska Standard Time, on tomorrow morning on Friday, in memory of the students and faculty members killed at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. That's once again happening at 9:30 tomorrow morning at the Alaska State Capitol building.
I've got no trophies on display. I sign them away.
And Nancy DeCherney has joined us for Arts Up. Nancy, thanks for coming over.
Hey.
Getting blown across the street there.
It's not as bad as yesterday.
Yeah. It seems like it has died down a little bit.
Yeah.
Or maybe we just
used to it.
Caught the right gust there.
Yeah.
Well, tell us what's happening in the arts this
weekend. Well, you know,
this is
the big week, so there's not that much going on.
No. Nothing really happening.
That's right. we just opened our miniature golf course, of course, so that's
the
happening.
The jackpot.
The jackpot, and we have had nonstop student groups starting at 9 o'clock in the morning. And let me just say, you teachers have...
Let me just say, I am sick of students.
No, I'm not sick of students. I'm amazed that teachers.
Yeah, teachers. Love you.
How you do it.
How do you do it?
Yeah, but we've had tons of little youngsters in there of all ages, and they're having a great time. So it's nice to see and some really interesting holes.
And the theme is fairy tales?
And it happens to be the 200th anniversary of the Brothers Grimm fairy tale book.
Where,
I had
there
no
you
idea.
Go. Of course you did. Of course you had an idea. You knew that.
I didn't.
That's why you did
subliminally,
this.
Subliminally, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, it's very fun. And
tell me some of that. I saw the Rapunzel hole, the balloons Rapunzel hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun. In fact, that was a shot in the newspaper of that. That was fun.
Well, you know, we do that after school program at Cedar Park in Geneva Woods. And the Cedar Park art students decided they would like to do Thumbelina. It's not a traditional Brothers Grimm tale, but it's still a fun little story. And they added a dragon to it, which makes it even more fun. But the hole itself is just delightful. It's really very – the kids did a lot of work on it. It's just wonderful. So
and that's a par what?
I don't know, three, four.
Par three? Par three.
I don't know.
Okay.
We have the Ugly Duckling is a par one.
Ah, I like the par ones.
However,
but they can be disappointing, those par ones.
They can be very disappointing. I would say this one falls in that category. The very first ball that was hit through it, boom, right through into the hole. And not since.
Oh.
It's one of those.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's the Ugly Duckling. Let's see. There's the canvas. The folks at the canvas did wonderful little, tiny little people for Peter Pan. There's the Captain Hook. And there's...
Very fun.
Yeah, it's very fun.
Cool.
It's a delightful little one. It's just really...
They're all great.
They're all great.
They're all terrific.
Yeah.
Okay,
so we want you to come by.
The jackpot, was it $5?
Is it five bucks
to get into jackpot?
If you want to bring a big party, up to 15 people, it's $50.
So call ahead.
Call ahead because you can go on our website. You can can see what spaces have been booked up. So,
very cool.
I think, anyway, let's see. You're missing the holiday tea unless you scurry right over to the Baranoff Hotel right now. There is a, my favorite sort of thing, champagne and sparkling wine tasting at a rookery.
That doesn't sound bad.
That doesn't sound bad. It's the season.
Yes.
Yeah, it help you pick out the
it's
right.
It's good for the digestion.
It's good
the
for your
sparkling
digestion.
Wine. Every, yes.
It's good for everything, whatever ails you. Let's see. Tomorrow they're going to do Christmas lights flights. You fly over the town and see where everybody's got Christmas lights. And there are quite a few. This is a benefit for the Children's Tumor Foundation and the Lions Sight Projects. Really interesting
very
fundraiser.
Very fun project and a very cool fundraiser, yeah.
6:30, Wishkanadi Poetry Slam and Open Mic at the Rookery. You know, they've recently become their own nonprofit.
Yeah.
I was very excited. It's become quite the thing around here.
Mm-hmm.
I think this might be your last weekend to see the best Christmas pageant ever at Theater at Latitude 58, which is at the Sun Room of Juneau Urgent Care, which is where the flashing lights are.
Yes.
I can't remember the radio station that you tune to,
but
there.
Yeah. It's not public radio.
It's not public radio, but I don't know what it is.
I think it's just their own private little, they have a little transmitter there.
Okay, well, that's what it is.
Yeah, just lasts for just that mile where that thing is. Yeah.
Cool. From, let's see, 9 to midnight, it's the end of the world party. You want to talk about that?
Sure, the Mayan end of the world. Thanks a lot, Mayans. For ending our Earth as we knew it.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, you know, of course, the world is ending tomorrow. Night, midnight is what we're figuring. The Mayans must have thought it was a midnight Alaska time, I'm guessing.
Well,
so we got three live bands. It's going to be great. We've got the B-Team All-Stars, which is Playboy Spaceman together with Tiger Pilot, a really cool kind of like all-star band. And then Tiger Pilot will also be playing a set. And then a brand new band called Disco Punch, which includes members of the Revengeancers. And a roller girl.
All righty then.
Sabrina Vertebraker is there as the lead singer. So
excellent.
I'm excited about Disco Punch.
This is going to be exciting. And this is at Rockwell.
It's all happening at Rockwell.
Yeah.
$5 to get in. It all goes to KXLL. It's a fundraiser for KXLL. So it'd be fun.
All right. And also at 9:30 to 2 a.m. over in Douglas, it's going to last longer, the end of the world. This is going to be at Louis. We got Kari and the Wrist Rockets performing.
Well, good luck. Last until 2 a.m. Because I think that's it. Apocalypse Now, midnight,
okay,
boom.
Well, I think, okay. Well, on that
but they're optimists.
Note.
They're optimists.
Yes. And it could be a different time zone.
Yes, that's true. So Douglas across the channel, yeah.
Okay. On Saturday is the Christmas boat lighting contest down at the Yacht Club and the Radio Center and the CBJ Docks and Harbors. So people get out there and decorate. I hope the wind dies down.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
It's climbing those masts and stuff.
No, not good. Okay. And then your last opportunity is to get your photos with Santa over at the Nugget Mall. And Sunday.
Get your crying baby photos.
Yes. And actually, we have a wonderful thing where you can get your photo taken with Santa at the Jack or have your photo taken as a fish.
Uh-huh. Just as a fish.
And
is Bing involved
Bing
in this?
Thing, yes.
Okay. All right.
He's made those, you know, those things where the hole is cut out. Right.
Very good.
There's a fisherman with a fish and you get to be the fish or you can be Santa Claus.
Okay.
One or the other. And let's see. Sunday is the boat lighting stuff also. And then at 11 a.m. to 1 at Rockwell Costa's Diner thing, they have the ukulele jam.
Nice.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
It's fun, and it appears that just anybody can show up with their ukulele and have a good time. So.
The brunches that they've been doing at Rockwell have been really fun. Costa in the kitchen again. It's a great thing.
And then, let's see, Monday's Christmas Eve, and winter break begins for the school. It was always a big deal.
Yeah. And all the kids just screamed. Yeah. I heard them.
Yeah. It will be, we're going to close the jackpot at 3, so don't try to come down during Christmas Eve. And, of course, Tuesday's Christmas Day. Lots of things for people to do that day with their friends and family. Wednesday, let's see, there's actually that kind of sums it up for this week.
Yeah, because it's Christmas week, so.
Everybody's got their families home.
Yes.
And things like that. So get out your jigsaw puzzles, go skiing, spend time with family, have a little hot chocolate.
The fun thing, jackpot, super fun. If you haven't ever got to the jackpot, it is so much fun. You're not going to have more fun for $5 than going to the jackpot with your family or just with buddies or hanging out.
Yeah, it's a great really thing fun. For all generations. You know, if you're not quite sure how to talk to your grandmother, bring her to the jackpot. Do around, you know.
It's just another example of how cool that building is and all the different things that happen over in that building, the Jack. It's amazing.
It's getting exciting.
It is getting exciting. It's going to, if we don't watch it, it's going to start getting exciting. So that is cool. And then, of course, the end of the world.
That is exciting.
Yeah. And cataclysmic.
And, yeah, it's different.
What do you think? Asteroid, what are you thinking?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'm just going to sit home and wait for it to happen.
Yeah, just perhaps after that rookery wine tasting.
Yes.
That'd be good. All right, well, that's
it. Thank you.
Thanks
happy
so much.
Holidays.
That's Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney, and happy holidays to you as well. And thanks for everything you do with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Well, thank
we appreciate
you for everything
it so much.
You do over here.
Yes,
so,
all right. Well, I'll take that. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. That's Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney. That's Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to all my guests. We're going to hear from NPR in just a minute. Once again, mostly cloudy skies is the forecast for today with 60-mile-an-hour winds near downtown. That's the same forecast for tonight as well, with the lows getting down to 10 degrees and even down to 1 degrees in wind-sheltered areas. But 60-mile-an-hour winds near downtown. 40-mile-an-hour is the winds predicted for tomorrow and tomorrow night with partly cloudy skies. Highs tomorrow, 24 degrees, and lows tomorrow night around 10 degrees. NPR headlines are next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.